The big question for many of us is, when are we going back to work? As we attempt to recover from the pandemic, what type of economy are we returning to, and how will life be different than it was before? Joining us today is Amanda Blackwood, CEO of the Sacramento Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce, James Beckwith, CEO of Five Star Bank, and Dave Roden, CEO of Safe Credit Union. Before we get into the big macro issues, I'd like to ask all of you though, and Dave, I'd like to start with you. How has the pandemic affected your employees?
Thank you, Scott. You know, I really look at our workforce in two segments. We have the workforce that is essential. We're an essential business. So we have, we call them our frontline heroes that are working in all of our branches. And we've gotten a great response from our membership in that we've kept all of our 20 branches in the region, our full service branches, open throughout the pandemic. And we have made sure we're available to work with our members. And then we have the workforce that's behind the scenes. And we have now more than 400 folks who normally work in an office that are working from home. And that creates, you know, for me, it creates challenges for working in an environment where we're now with our family members and trying to do things digitally instead of face-to-face. So, you know, you hope that you can be as efficient as possible, but it's a challenge to be as productive in this work from home, this new work from home environment.
Amanda?
So I think now more than ever, and you know, this is true for our employees and the members that we're talking to, the culture that you had on your team going into this is now so incredibly important now, because folks are dealing with obviously the work that they're doing. I mean, from a Chamber of Commerce perspective, we started working around the clock, you know, mid-March, and we're still pulling 10, 12-hour days so that we can make sure that, you know, those that need us are there. And the conversations that our employees are having, it's heavy stuff. I mean, these are folks that are navigating, do I take on debt? Do I open my business? Do I lay off employees? Do I, you know, so all of that. So I know we've really rallied as an internal team. We connect every day, you know, in the morning, in the night, we do video calls, we're texting each other, we're using Teams so that you can stay connected. All of those things you were dealing with as a business, you know, going into this, now you're still dealing with, and you're remote. So you can't just walk down the hallway and, you know, hey, can you take a look at this? Hey, can you, I mean, this is different. And you've got folks that are using technology and platforms that are new, and you're dealing with, maybe they have internet at their house and maybe they don't. So a lot of those things that we kind of took for granted, hey, hop on a Zoom call. I've got an employee that's up in El Dorado County. They couldn't if they wanted to. Right. So, you know, I think we're all navigating it as much as we can and just keeping communication as open as possible, knowing that the stress that your team members are dealing with, they've got kids at home, they've got teenagers at home. I'm homeschool, right? I've got a homeschool operation on my kitchen table with two little kids and a husband that's a teacher. So we're all just figuring out as much as we can, but coming from a place of empathy to know we're all in it together and we're going to keep talking through it.
James.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you for having me on your program. It's an honor. So, like Dave, we've been able to keep open all of our offices and not have had to close any of them. And we're in our sixth week of our pandemic response, and it's been tough because not all that frontline workforce can actually work. Amanda mentioned that she's got young kids at home. So we've had to do a lot of shuffling. A lot of people have really stepped up to keep our offices open. We also have a fair amount in our offices outside of our branches. In particular, we stood up a pretty robust SBA department to help process and fund all these PPP loans, which we've been dealing with over the last 2.5-3 weeks. So probably about, two-fifths of our workforce are working at home. The rest are in the office.
Speaking of that, James, just incidentally, how many PPP loans were you able to process before the window closed?
Well, we were able to process 876 PPP loans. I call them PPP 1 loans because we all know another authorization is coming through. And that amounted to about $212 million that we were able to give our customers and new customers to help stand up their businesses. And it was an all-out effort, Scott. It was 7 days a week, working well into the night, every night. Daily loan committees. It was we were able to pivot and essentially throw our entire workforce at this effort, and it's a wonderful thing to see that we could actually do that. I think we're small enough to be nimble, and everybody just really pitched in. It was a great effort.
And Dave, SAFE similarly also processed a number of those loans before the window closed. Correct?
Yes, we have. And Scott, I know. You're aware SAFE is principally a consumer financial institution, but we do commercial lending and business banking as well. Certainly not to the scale that James and Five Star Bank does, but we did in round one about 200 PPP loans, and we have another pipeline of 300 or more loans waiting to come through for the next round of funding, and we're trying to prepare those business members that we have for that round once that money becomes available, because you know we believe the funding is going to go just as quickly this time as it did the last time. And like James, we're working around the clock, and I just have a much smaller commercial team, and but we are absolutely dedicated to serving our business members' needs.
I guess a future show is to talk about how two community institutions really outworked some of the majors, but we'll lay that on the table and come back to that on a different day. I want to ask you all, James, how is the economy going to be different 6 months from now than when all of this started?
Well, I think you put, I'll put my response in context of your timeline. 6 months is going to be right about at the end when all of this government assistance comes to an end. And when people have spent their money, all the SBA loans will now have to be, at that point in time, have to be serviced by the borrower. Right now they're getting 6 months P&I payments made by the SBA. So you could say, well, everybody's going to be fully launched, or the vast majority of these businesses are going to be on their way to recovery. Or you can say, well, there might be a bit of a cliff after the government assistance runs out. It's really too soon to tell. It's going to be a function of how quickly we get back to work. It's going to be a function of how quickly things normalize. And what is it going to be like to practice social distancing and still conduct a robust, be an active participant in a robust economy? Those things are yet to be determined. But I'm going to suggest to you, Scott, there's going to be a lot of innovation that happens. I know a lot of our customers have pivoted to look to new sources of revenue to be able to help bring back their employees, to help them in that endeavor, whether they're in the manufacturing space, whether they're in the medical space, whatever the case may be. So it's certainly hopeful from where I sit, but the federal government has done so much to stand up businesses in the United States, and particularly in the capital region. We've got some strong congressional leaders that have helped that process along that we're very grateful for.
Amanda, I see you nodding your head, and I know that you've had some thoughts because you touch so many businesses on how businesses are adapting and changing. How do you see businesses being innovative in order to meet what in many ways is still an unknown that faces us in the future?
Right. So we've been talking to boots on the ground folks every day, right? So I'll give you some real life examples. In a conversation yesterday with a gal that owns a brick and mortar retail, right? We did a forum on how might you pivot your business. And I think there's a lot of emphasis. If you were already doing online classes, you already had online membership, right? You already had some kind of virtual business line. It can feel like, well, that's an easier pivot. But we're also seeing that in our retail. So I'll tell you the story of Susan. I've been in business for 3 years, small brick and mortar in ESAC. She sells kitchen goods, gifts. And it was one of those moments for her that she said, the nature of my business is by folks walking in the door. And that's not going to be the case for, you know, she made this choice about 3 weeks ago. It's not going to be the case for 3 weeks. It's not going to perhaps be the case for the next 4 to 6 to 8. And to James's point on normalization, you know, there's a science phase of testing and then, okay, thumbs up, you can go back out. But then there's the consumer mentality of, well, I don't know about that. And I don't know how I feel. And, you know, this is fear and these are people's choices. And as a business owner, you can't control that. So in Susan's mind, this virtual way of doing business is for now, but is for always. And she is thinking of her virtual store as another storefront, as another location. Had that conversation also with a coffee shop owner that has shifted to a membership-based distribution way of, you know, we now, consumer mentality, right? It's been over 3 weeks. We know that humans can set up a habit within 3 weeks of repetitive behavior. So if your consumer's at home for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and now groceries are delivered, my coffee's delivered, my dry cleaning's delivered, hey, maybe this is convenient. This is a way that I want to continue to operate. So from a coffee shop to a nail salon to we have another salon owner that she can't meet clients, but now she's doing classes online, teaching people how to color their hair at home. So, you know, and in all of these conversations, I'm asking folks, is this something you're doing for triage right now? Or are you building this line of business for continuation past this time? And ubiquitously across the board, be it restaurant, online, salon owner, brick and mortar retail, they're anticipating consumers will continue to want to interact with us in this way. This is a business line we feel like we've always kind of should have had, but we've been so busy just doing our normal day-to-day stuff that we didn't build that line of business. Now that we have some time, we're going to diversify our revenue streams and know memberships, apps, virtual, this is probably just going to be part of our normal workday, our normal life, and we're going to make sure that we meet that consumer need now and into the future for the long term.
Dave, talking about consumers, the consumers that had come through your branches virtually or not every single day, what are you hearing from them in terms of what products and services that they're looking forward to getting back to consuming on a more regular basis? And which ones do you think might be slower for them to recover in terms of the volume that they've historically enjoyed?
So thank you for that question, Scott. You know, what we're seeing today as we stand up new services to help our membership navigate through the uncertainty of this pandemic situation, you know, oftentimes it comes around to employment, whether folks are newly unemployed or newly underemployed because the business they're working for is struggling, plays a big factor, obviously, in their ability to meet their daily financial needs. And so, you know, I'm grateful to be on KVIE today to be talking about this because, you know, KVIE is a public institution, has a mission to educate the community on a range of important topics. And as a credit union, we're in the business of educating our membership about financial confidence and financial resiliency. And so we have programs to help our members defer their consumer loan payments. And I think it's a pretty interesting early indicator. In a typical month, we may see our members do 100 consumer loan payment deferments in a month. During the year-end holidays, during the Christmas holidays, we may see 1,000 payment deferrals a month as people are trying to free up some extra cash to manage their lives. In the last 4 weeks, we've done over 9,000 consumer loan payment deferrals. So folks need extra cash flow. And, you know, freeing up a $200, $300, $400, $500 payment is really helpful. That can, you know, buy a lot of groceries or pay an extra bill or a utility. And so what we've been able to do and the way we've pivoted early in this pandemic is to create that those tools so they're very accessible to our membership. You know, we have nearly 240,000 members in the region. We can't talk to each and every one of those members to enable those payment deferrals. So we were able to quickly stand it up so those payment deferrals can happen through our online banking app or through our mobile app. So members don't have to talk to us. They don't have to explain why. If they need a payment deferral, they can just go into our digital tools and request that activity. And we're getting great response from our members. I've got a story about an individual who recently lost his job. And so he went online and he applied for a credit card as a means to supplement his income. And, you know, look, we process lots of online loan applications. For this particular gentleman, his credit card application was declined. But we look at declines, and we're paying even more attention to declines right now. And we reached out to this individual, and while a credit card wasn't his best choice, we were able to give him a 0% $1,200 12-month loan. So that put, and we were able to do that in 30 minutes. So we were able to put $1,200 into his account right away. And the good news was he just got a job with one of our great employers in town, Raley's, at the Raley's distribution center in North Potomac, I think. And so he's on his way, and we were able to talk to him about financial resiliency and how to build his financial resiliency as he works through his life circumstances.
James, when you hear about how consumer behavior is changing and the types of services that clients are seeking or are accessing in greater volume now, how do you think, what sectors of the economy are likely to come back first, and which sectors are likely to lag for a while?
Well, you know, that's a question that we've all been pondering in terms of looking at our own portfolios and also opportunities for growth. I think anything having to do with the medical space, whether on the supply side or medical services, anything involved with that, I think that's going to be an opportunity. As we dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic and everything that it brings and all the behavior modifications that we go through, I think people are going to rest upon trying to find out, you know, whether they have antibodies or not. I mean, I think anybody who actually supplies a home COVID-19 test kit is going to be a big winner. And then as big employers, you know, we have a responsibility to our employees to help them assess their medical condition certainly on a confidential basis. So anything in the medical space, I think, is going to come back quickly because it's so needed. I think there's other industries that have been doing they're doing fine. Anybody in the grocery business or in the food business is absolutely killing it right now. Anybody who is associated with last mile delivery or the shopping and whatever the case may be is doing extremely well. Obviously, Amazon, I think the doorbell rings 3 or 4 times a day. I'm sure same at your households too, right? So those are some of the industries that I think that are going to be stood up more quickly. After pondering this question, I thought, what do we really need? What would be really great to see from an industry perspective? We're all dealing with kids at home, I think, in some form or fashion, right? Okay, you know, whether they're in college or whatever the case may be, grade school. And my estimation, I looked this up this morning, I'm thinking there's probably anywhere between 6 to 8 million kids, and I'm going to say 8 through 12 in higher ed, California, that are suddenly furloughed at home. And I think if we can get them back in school, if we can find a way to make that happen, I think the world changes dramatically for us, not only in our personal lives, but also in our business lives. As they become engaged again with their classmates and their schools, that's what I'm hoping that happens quickly. As I couldn't imagine these kids being around for the fall term. To me, that's, boy, I hope I hope that's not the condition that it exists in.
I think we all share that view, James. Amanda, the Metro Chamber of Commerce is the voice of business within this region. And this may sound counterintuitive, but going to what James just said about education and all these school kids, is this a good time to start a business?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I will give you a real life example. One of the CEOs that we spoke to over this week, what he does is he did homeschool programming, right? And so his business is booming because you've got parents going, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this curriculum. I don't know how to do homeschool. So it is an interesting time that if you have a business that either was already on virtual platform or, you know, can easily pivot, you might be okay. You might be doing better than you were doing previously. If you have a business that teaches people how to set up online marketplaces, if you have a business that teaches folks, you've now got all of these, you know, small business that are going Instagram, online retail, I don't even know where to start. I can't imagine doing that. I've run a little shop for 20 years and it worked for me, and what the heck do I even do, right? So those providers that are able to help in those sectors, your business is growing right now because we need it now and we need it in the future. And I think, you know, one of the challenges with small business in general, and I'll say as the Metro Chamber, we run the Small Business Development Center for the Capital Region, right? So that's free technical one-on-one counseling and support for small business. We work with them every day. And what we find in generalities is your solopreneur, your small business, they are a expert at the thing they do. I make the very best canned tomatoes you've ever seen. I run a workshop for people that gets them online that you've never seen. That's great. But to run the business, that's not necessarily their skill set, right? You're not HR and running your books and creating marketing campaigns, and you know that you build that incredible product. That's what you do. So we're now seeing, you know, is it a good time to start? It might be. Is it a good time to get your house in order? So again, that as that small business owner, that list of things you knew you needed to do, like organize my MailChimp, communicate with all of my customers, just get on the phone and call them and let them know that you're still there. This is the time to do all of that, while positioning yourself for when you do reopen. You know, do that housekeeping, do that best practice, reach out one-on-one. You have the time. And I think we've all used the word on this call, the pivot, that understand that folks probably want to engage with your business in a new way. And if you can get proactive on taking those steps, you are going to be positioned for coming back far more competitively than, you know, I'm going to hunker down and just pretend that, well, in 2 months, I'm going to unlock my doors and everyone's going to walk in and it's going to be what it was. That's probably not the case. So really think about that strategically. Really think about how you can position. And if you've got a business that can meet that need, it's gig delivery. It's, you know, people need it. And lean on into really doing business development right now, because the demand is there now and it's most definitely going to be there in the future.
You know, with that demand being there in the future, help me connect this up to some of the efforts that all three of you have been involved with in trying to connect the underserved communities and neighborhoods of this region to our economy, both the economy we used to call current and this emerging economy. How are we going to reach those tough neighborhoods and those hard-to-employ communities? Because it sounds like we are going to be entering into somewhat of a brave new world.
So I'll give you my two cents. Couple of things. One, we are seeing the gaps in infrastructure right now. So in regards to 5G broadband, just access to internet, we already knew that, and we're continuing to see that. From a policy standpoint, we've really got to get aggressive about creating a digital infrastructure that is accessible. I'll give you a real story. Right, my husband is a middle school teacher in Sac City School District. They've got a very robust online curriculum for kids. They literally don't have Chromebooks and they literally don't have internet. So you've got all these folks at home that can't access that. I think from a telehealth standpoint, we're also seeing our medical providers are experiencing a new way of doing business, and we want folks to be able to access healthcare. And if you don't have basic internet, you just can't use it. So that from an infrastructure standpoint, from mobility, you know, internet at this point, it's a utility. It's ubiquitous and you need it. The other area is truly focusing on digital skill set. So I know we saw, right, big group project, Metro Chamber, Valley Vision, GSAC, SACOG, a year and a half ago, brought Brookings in to do a stress test on us. And they told us then that your inclusion in your diverse populations is lagging and your basic digital skill set is massively lacking, particularly in your minority communities of color. So, and we will be a majority minority community. That's what our data tells us. So if we can now really advocate for getting basic digital skill training into the hands of our students, into the hands of those that have now been displaced, our hospitality and our retail workers are not going to come back in the volume that they were. And many of those workers are minority living in our most disadvantaged communities. We've got to make those skill sets available for every industry that we'll be hiring after this.
And I think that that's a good place to leave it off. Thanks to you all. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.